Angela, you were just going to show me a cat.
Oh.
He walked up, this one walked up the driveway on the farm about 6 years ago. And he's inside now. And we have six cats. I have five cats, five, six with that feral one that we rehomed. So, yeah.
Ah, sweet. Well,
yeah.
Is that him purring?
Yeah, that's him. I'll mute myself so we won't be disturbed by him purring.
Nice to hear.
Yeah, it's loud.
All right. Well, welcome everyone. We will start by going around and saying hi, starting with Bob K. Mark. Marv. Erica. Choketsu. Gathel. Drew. Paula. Alice. Jill. Sabrina. And Ruth Ann. Where are you now, Alice?
South Dakota, near the Badlands.
Nice.
South Dakota, honestly, isn't my favorite place. But, oh.
All right. Well, in terms of announcements, I'm guessing everyone here knows about the term student opportunity coming up. The opening retreat is September 11th, and the closing retreat is, end of November, beginning of December. I don't know if anybody knows, but there's information on it on the website and in the email newsletter. And let's see, I guess in terms of what we're going to study next on Tuesdays, I have a couple possibilities in mind, and y'all are lucky to be able to be here in order to vote. So there's two things in my mind, and we could do both of them just on alternating weeks. We've done that before. So one, I thought of doing a series on my 9 fields of Zen practice, which is something that I talk about on the podcast, my podcast. And the 9 fields are Zazen, Dharma study, cultivating insight, precepts, opening the heart, connecting with the ineffable, and Nyoho, which means acting in accord with the Dharma in everyday activities, karma work, and bodhisattva activity. So these are the, kind of, it's meant to be a comprehensive description and a description of practice that reminds us of how practice can permeate every aspect of our lives. And it's not just about Zazen. It's not just about coming to Sangha. There's many aspects to it. So I was thinking of doing it all week on each field. But also, recently, a new book has come out. I'm going to share the link to it in the chat. This is an Amazon link, but that means that you can kind of look inside it. You can buy it from somewhere else if you want. That is You Are Still Here by Kyogen Carlson. And this is Kyogen's one of my teachers. So thank you, Bob. And so my ordination teacher was Gyokoko Carlson, his wife, but generally speaking, if you took one or the other of them as your teacher, you got both of them. So this is really, there is another book that's out of print called Zen in the American Green that Kyogen wrote many, many years ago. But I think this is, you know, obviously these are teachings from him 20, 30 years later than that book. So this is, you know, really his mature Dharma. And I look forward to studying it with folks, because it is really representative of our particular lineage of Soto Zen. So I don't know, I guess, you know, the advantage of the kind of, you know, nine fields class is it has more of a sense of coherence. Whereas, you know, when we use books like we're using tonight, each one kind of stands by itself, and there's not necessarily something pulling you to the next class. But it's worked well before to alternate, although that means both of them are going to go on for a really long time. But I don't know. Raise your hand if you would prefer nine fields as a straight shot. And Ruth Ann, you can speak up rather than raising your hand if you want. Say Paula and Michael and Erica. And then who, that's three. And then who would like to just like delve into Kyogen's book just as a straight shot? Mark, Alice, cool. And then who would prefer, or at least really not mind, just kind of doing them in parallel? All right. Well, it seems like there's enthusiasm for both, so probably just do them in parallel. So what, you know, make sure that you check the email newsletter, which will give you the upcoming classes, but then that always links to a page on our website. So you can look under our practice, and it's under upcoming study, and then there'll be a list, and that will also include, you know, well, what are we going to be studying that night? You know, which of the nine fields or which chapter of Kyogen's book? So I'm not sure whether we'll I doubt we're going to just do every chapter of the book, because that means, you know, we study something for like 4 or 5 months. But maybe it's like super good and we will. So I will take a look at it and update that Tuesday study page. All right. So tonight we are studying another one of the householder koans, and I'm thinking that I might I was thinking that we might do one more of these before we go on to something else. I don't know if anybody's feeling like, because I did, you know, give the impression we're going to be studying this book for a while, so you might have gotten it and whatever. So I don't want to leave it too soon. So go ahead and let me know by email or something if you really want to see more out of this book. Also, I suspect we will see it again, because it'll be a really handy thing to pick up, you know, if I'm going to be out of town and somebody else is leading a class, it's a handy thing to pick up and choose a chapter. 44, wow, better part of a year if we're going to do every chapter. All right, so tonight we're studying in this book, Robin, Unripe Fruit. It's on page 167. And this one, I thought it's a very short chapter, and I thought it was very, very good. So I thought we would just read it out loud, but switch off voices so that we don't get bored. So I can start, and then I don't want to put anybody on the spot for reading, but who else would be willing to read a paragraph or two of this chapter, just so I know who to call on? Shoketsu, Michael. I see anybody else? All right. Okay. So this is the koan poem. If you've really lived, then you've already died many times. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. And the koan is, why does the fruit fall from the tree before it has ripened? And then the reflection. Our time seems to come whether we're ready for it or not. Whether I'm 18 or 80, am I ever really ready? For that matter, am I ever really ripe? What does ripe feel like? Is it that I've fulfilled all my dreams? Is it that I've lived a happy life? Is it that I've aged gracefully with a loving family beside me? Is it that the promises of my birth have been all creatively and joyously fulfilled? For that matter, am I ever really ripe for anything? Leaving home, getting married, having a baby, getting one job, getting another job, retirement, death? We have our life narrative. This happened, then this happened, then this happened. One phase of life follows another in a nice, predictable fashion, each phase making us wiser by the day, like a pear that's green at the beginning, turns a tinge of pink, then a blush, a flush, and finally a ruddy, ready color. But life doesn't work like that. If anything, our mantra is usually, ready or not, here I come. Shoketsu?
No creature ever falls short on its own of its own completion. Whenever it stands, wherever it stands, it does not fail to cover the ground. Life happens exactly as it's meant to. You might think it should have gone this way or that, should have been bigger, richer, more important. It's a sad day when someone tells me that he feels he hasn't really lived, that his life was full of obstructions. His parents, his upbringing, failures at work, troubles at home, so many unfulfilled promises. Or when someone belittles life generally. Look at what's happened to this country. Young people didn't behave like this when I was growing up. We bemoan our life and wish it were different, as though if we could change one thing, the right parent for the wrong one, or the right spouse for the wrong one, making the right choice instead of the wrong one long ago, our life would be a lot happier. Is that really so? If a bird or a fish tries to reach the limit of its element before moving in it, this bird or this fish will not find its way or its place. Attaining this place, one's daily life, is the realization of the ultimate reality. Like the fish and the birds, none of us will ever investigate this entire earth. None of us will ever live out every possibility we ever faced, or relieve the many choices we make moment after moment. If we try, then like the fish and the birds, we will not find our way or our place. Where do we find them? In our daily life, in our daily life, in the present moment. What would it take to fully accept how our life has unfolded and live it in contentment? Not think it should have been something else, or let other people tell us it should have been something else. Do you want to take it next?
Mm-hmm. Michael?
Or did you want
to? I got it.
Yeah.
Surrendering to our life brings tremendous richness and depth. Zen master Kosho Uchiyama wrote, all of us are always living the present moment. the profundity of the present moment, even when we don't know it and are blind to it. The profundity of the present moment is embracing us as the present moment. Eating an apple, walking the dog, cutting vegetables for soup, making the bed, all of these activities embrace us fully. That is so regardless of whether we experience it or not. So isn't it better to experience it? As Ben Connolly writes, countless unfathomable things are out of your control, but you always have the opportunity to give your best intention at this moment and thus plant seeds of happiness, kindness, and well-being for all things. We can complain and grieve. We can spend our days in regret, or we can appreciate this unbelievably rare opportunity given to us through birth, the result of innumerable events and processes unfolding over billions of years. Doesn't contemplating this just a little bit fill you with wonder, humbling, and liberating all at the same time? This body does not belong to you, nor anyone else, said the Buddha. So what is this thing called my life? Is it just something private that starts at birth and ends at death? Could it also be now, manifesting here in our bodies right now? And now that is beginningless and endless, an unimaginable gift. It's the body of liberation. How we walk, how we talk, how we meditate, how we are with others is our only path to liberation. There is no other. Working diligently with this body, with our life, as it is, can we do our best? And then it says, what regrets about the past?
We'll talk about the questions later.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So to get our juices, creative juices flowing, I wanted to brainstorm some examples of how people can waste their lives. Because I think we can fall into a bit of a trite Zenism. And say, you know, basically, don't wallow in regret, right? So just, there is no wasting your life. Whatever it is, and which is kind of another side of a delusion. So just for a little while, I just wanted us to reflect on what we mean, what it means for someone to waste their life. And I'm not that this is an extreme absolute judgment or anything like that. So go ahead and, there's a pretty small group, go ahead and unmute yourself, or else you can electronically raise your hand by clicking on reactions at the bottom. Well, maybe not when I'm sharing the screen. I don't know if you can do that or not. How can people waste their lives? Michael.
Yeah, I kind of think that, you know, not taking risks. You know, being afraid to give up that crummy job because, you know, you're afraid of losing a certain amount of income or of status, you know, being afraid to take that jump.
Erica?
I would say waiting, like waiting for the perfect moment to do just about anything.
I was thinking in addiction, having addictions and not being able to, it's an illness, I know, but not being able to or have the support to get into recovery.
Paula.
I was thinking of one way we waste our lives is by blaming other people and not taking personal responsibility for our dissatisfaction with life, our unhappiness.
Holding a grudge. Maybe to the point where the grudge is no longer, but you're just holding it because you have to keep up appearances.
Being judgmental to the point where you destroy loving relationships.
My personal problem, talking too much and not listening.
One that comes to mind for me is I'm constantly seeking external validation. Needing some kind of praise from someone else, whether that's socially or at work.
Marv?
I would say since defining waste is personal, it would be not working towards your own goals.
Ruthanne? Did you have something?
Delusion of seeking to be in control, whether in relationships or many things in life. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good list. I guess wallowing in regret is a way to waste time.
I think we could retitle this list
Manifestations
of Self-Attachment, and it would be
huh.
apropos still. You know, waiting for the perfect moment is, you know, being attached to the way things are. Addiction is obviously self-attachment. You know, if you're judgmental, then you're attached to your own views. It all kind of seems to come back to that.
Yeah. That's the key delusion. Sense that somehow we are in control. Somehow we can benefit at the expense of others. So when we talk tonight about, you know, waste or not waste, appreciation, acceptance, that this is not not an judgment that someone outside of us makes, that Zen makes, that Buddhism makes, that I as a teacher make. You are wasting your life because, you know, this is very much, this is each of us, you know, honestly, in relationship to our own lives, what do we feel? You know, because it's not like what's a waste for one person isn't a waste for another, right? It's not an objectively measurable thing. we can probably guess looking at some people's lives, right? Like, that's a shame. But really, this is about our own lives. So when we ask ourselves that question of, you know, what does it really matter what we do? Do we just need to accept and appreciate it? Or are there some things that, you know, we do kind of regret, or at least we want to do differently, do better in the future? So I wanted to, having gotten those ideas going, I wanted to spend a little time in breakouts discussing the questions that were at the end of the chapter. So I will, I guess I can copy and paste them into the chat. Hold on. What regrets about the past do you have? And if you don't feel like being self-revelatory, you're definitely not obligated to here. These are just to get some conversation going. What regrets about the past do you have? Do you think you have wasted your life in any particular way? And perhaps the most interesting question, living your short lifespan with fullness and appreciation, moment by moment, is there waste or not? So let me, I think if I, many of you have the book, and I think if I paste that into the chat, that at least some of you, not those on Linux, but some of you, I believe, have access to the chat even when you go into the breakout room. So I guess we have pretty good breakout rooms right like that. So I will just send y'all back where you were for about 10 minutes. Oh, there's a couple unassigned people. Let me see. I'll send you somewhere. I would love to hear a little bit about what people came up with or shared in terms of living your life moment by moment. Is there waste or not? You can share something that you shared or something that you heard.
I'll talk. I raised the issue that wasting your life, or if you're living moment by moment, there is no waste. The waste is empty, and it's not measurable. And if you're living a moment by moment fulfilled life with appreciation, there is no waste. It doesn't exist. Almost like depreciation kind of cancels it out.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about some mistakes we've made and how, you know, going through those mistakes oftentimes leads you down the path where things unfold in different ways that are actually quite pleasing, you know? So you never know.
Yeah. Well, what about, you know, that list of stuff that we came up with earlier sure does seem like a way to waste life. You know, if you like, I don't know, let's say you had some really delicious, excellent wine in a glass and you poured it on the ground, you know, like a sad use or a lack of use of something very precious, valuable.
Well, when I think about that list, it brought up in my mind is, you know, is my profession. You know, I'm a science teacher in a Title I school, and it's rough. You know, it's rough, and you know, it's easy for teachers to get bogged down in complaining, and that's, you know, and for me, I've kind of gotten to a point where I try to get past all that because it's not helping anybody. It's not helping me. It's wasting my time, you know, to sit around and complain about things that you really can't, you know, change or control, you know. And sometimes, you know, when a colleague gets like that, I'll say, you know, if you feel this way this often, maybe you ought to think about finding another school. Just do it, you know, or something different, you know, and instead of trying to find the good in what you're doing, what students are and what they bring, and, you know, yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's, and I think from that list, this would kind of fall under like, I don't know, I don't think this was on the list, but griping about your situation. I don't know if that's an apt comparison, but yeah, no, it's, yeah, we're starting up now, and, you know, and it's kind of like the situation is not, you know, great, you know, we were told that, you know, we're still in the pandemic, right? Right. Aren't we still in the pandemic with a more virulent virus? And so, you know, I looked at my classes and I've got, you know, the numbers are like this. So and my rooms are sizable, but they're not that sizable. So I got like 32, 31, 30, 35, 35. And the principal told us during our, you know, when we come back, you know, all our trainings that we go through, that it's okay if the kids aren't 3 feet apart. Now I'm thinking, isn't the virus more contagious than it was before? You know, and so basically, and that's just the way it is. And I'm glad I'm vaccinated, you know, and so I just have to kind of see, you know, try not to go into this situation with angry or indignant, because that will come across to my students in a way that's not going to be helpful to anybody. It may undermine me, you know, so, yeah.
I wonder if, throw this out there, I wonder if this question of waste, or maybe to flip it around, if waste is a negative judgment, positive judgment would be, you know, living use of whatever our lives, our opportunities, our talents or something. So what if maybe the question of living use is only something that is about moving from this moment into the next moment, and not anything to do with the past? Because as you say, when you look, I mean, what point is there in regretting anything, really, right? Like, because it just, that it's what brought you here. I mean, I guess you can, you know, we'd say, Do not dwell on past mistakes, but create wisdom from ignorance, right? So we let ourselves be informed by our past mistakes. Hopefully we learn something from them, but yeah, that doesn't seem like regret is a very Buddhist sentiment. And yet this question of like a living use and the, you know, that description of maybe holding back and, you know, not taking a risk or, you know, undermining things with complaining or judgment.
Yeah. And I totally see where you're coming from. Like before, in this current position I'm in now, I was in a different school that was a complete dumpster fire. And I was that person, and it was just from moment to moment, it was awful, awful. And I'm like, you know, I gotta do something. And it was because I had been at this place for 13 years, and it's hard to make a change when you're so, you know, ingrained in the place, you know. I did, and it was really hard to kind of break free of that, and it was kind of scary. But I'm much, much happier where I am now. So that's kind of an example of, you know, where, you know, it's really lame and awful, but, you know, you take that jump, you know, whatever it is, and it may be an even worse mistake, but it could be awesome, you know. You know, and sometimes I feel like some people can make those choices easier than others, you know. So,
Paula.
Thinking of what Michael was saying and what you were saying, Jamia, about living use and the role of regret and its relevance. I find if I'm trying to live a mindful life and I reflect on how I've handled a situation in the past, and I have an opportunity to come back into a similar situation, if I have a feeling that I didn't handle the past situation well, then it's like a fire that burns to help me refine how I'm going to respond in this next situation. So the example that comes to mind for me, two jobs I have. The one I was thinking about is in working, trimming horses' feet. And sometimes the owners are agitated about stuff in their lives and their horses sense it and they get agitated. And then I can get agitated. And it's just not a nice feeling. And so if I know that I'm walking into a place where that might happen, I try not to say, oh, I just know this is going to be awful. I try not to do that. I try to catch myself doing that. And to me, it burns the fire in me of being aware to kind of read what's going on and to de-escalate things for the owner, the horse and myself. And when I use my past experiences where I haven't been, you know, in good form, I guess, or I may have let my blaming other people or situations instead of taking responsibility, I can use that awareness and be a fire to sort of refine how I behave in the present moment.
It occurs to me, I'm just going to share this, share our list again, and just think of like how, in a way, like we could be caught in any one of these things, and the way out of each one, could happen in this instant. You know, like this is that that kind of that whole like dependent dimension of our lives and the independent dimension kind of come together, in that we could be mindful, as you know, as Drew was saying, this self-attachment or fear, and like, okay, in this moment, I don't want to take this risk because I'm afraid of this and afraid of that. And like, but if we have, if we're mindful and present, we have a chance to maybe make a different choice. And Paolo, you're talking about that. If we're mindful of what's going on, we can be informed by our past experience. If we recognize we're waiting for the perfect moment, we'll go, you know, the perfect moment's never going to come, right? Like, maybe I need to just jump out there. Talking too much and listening too little, we notice that, we can go, what's going on? So I guess in that sense, like the not wasting begins right now. And then of course, just there's that aspect of, I guess wasting also is just not noticing. You know, I think that's been one of my great fears, is that I would just kind of be oblivious, you know, self-absorbed, and not notice my life as it's passing. I feel like that is the waste. To be like, oh, wait a second. And I think that's what she was getting at in this chapter of like, I'm not ripe yet. What? My life is over. I had a lot more I was going to do. But like, Well, I guess that brings us up until 9 o'clock. Close with our verse. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming. Good evening.
Good night. I really enjoyed the topic.
Good night.